couple weeks ago, I told a story about a genie, and I got such overwhelming positive response, I figured I had to share another genie story. So I tell a story about Steve, who's walking on a beach, and he finds a lamp. And he rubs a magic lamp, and a genie comes out. And genie says, "Oh, Steve, congratulations, you got 3 wishes. What will your first wish be, Steve?" And Steve says, "I wish I was rich." The genie snaps his fingers and says, "Okay, and what's your second wish going to be, Rich?" So we all want to be rich. Sometimes we're disappointed to find out that chasing richness doesn't always bring us the wealth and the money and the ambition we always hungered for. We talked last week all about this. People using the emojis to laugh. Thank you. This is the Zoom version of a booming response to more genie jokes. So we talked last week about the idea about having a lot of wants, having a lot of aspirations. A hunger is, in a way, poverty, because want equals lack. They're actually synonyms. So if one has a lot of wants, they actually have a lot of things that they're lacking, whereas someone who is satisfied with what they have, what Chazal called sameach b'chelko, then a person is rich, not in a fluffy religious way only, but also in a very practical monetary sense. They don't have a lot of wants. They don't have a lot of lacks. They're not hungering for more and more things, because when you hunger for more and more things, a person is never going to be satiated. To truly be rich, to truly become rich, a person has what we call a giving mindset. A giving mindset, a person who is in a mindset of koach hanesina, of giving, by definition, feels that they have more than they need because they're giving out to other people, which tells them, convinces themselves, that they are not lacking anything. Which raises now an important question, which we ended off with last week, we're going to pick up with this week. The question is, okay, so you're saying giving is always good because givers don't lack anything. Givers aren't trying to fill some kind of void. They feel so satisfied and self-sufficient that they're looking to help other people. But now raises a question of, well, wait a second. Sometimes compassion comes from a mindset. Oh, there is one unmuted. If first, whoever's not muted can please mute themselves so we don't have any interruptions. Thank you. So there's this idea that when a person gives, they're not lacking anything. But what about a person who gives because they feel so bad for the person asking for money? Or they feel so bad that someone else is suffering that they want to give to someone else? Well, you know what? Couldn't you argue in that sense the person is lacking, the giver is lacking? Because they themselves feel so incomplete, they feel so uncomfortable with that person's pain on their conscience, that to ease their conscience, they have to give something. And they feel that sense of relief. Isn't that also kind of filling a hunger, filling a void of kind of dealing with an uncomfortable feeling themselves? That's the question he asks. I put an arrow next to it at the end of chapter 8, where the big arrow is on page 44. Merachim is compassion. Nosi ba'olam chavero is a person who actually feels with someone else. Couldn't you argue? Asher heima mimidos hamu'ulo shebnei adam. Despite the fact that those are the most impressive, important, kind midos, character traits, avo behen yitzdaru b'tzaras chavreim. Aren't they really suffering with the other person? Uki'ilu yachzer la'atzmam yechashiv lahem. And they, the giver, feel like they're lacking. They feel that their heartstrings are being pulled because they don't have everything. They don't have this person off their conscience. V'hatavasam im ha'acherim tashkit es tzaras rucham shel hanosnim. And then that giving, that being good to other people, assuages the pain of their own spirit. Is this not just another type of lacking and filling a void? That was how he ended off last time. What's he going to say about this? How exactly are we to put in the giving category the idea of giving from a sense of compassion, giving because a person is truly moved out of pain and pity for someone else? In a sense, how could that person be called complete? They are carrying the burden of everybody else. Couldn't you argue that they too are not at the highest level of giving? We'll read it inside together, some very fascinating, very beautiful words as always, Rav Dessler. But in a nutshell, he's going to say yes. He's going to accept the premise of the question as that is not the highest level of giving. The highest level of giving is not to give because one feels that they are uncomfortable with the person's poverty, or they are incomplete until they assuage their conscience about the person asking for assistance or guidance. That being said, they are still wonderful midos, and they're stepping stones toward a higher, loftier goal of giving. Now, we started off the entire series of talking about giving like God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our Creator, created us with a sense of a strive for giving because He, our Creator, gives. When Hashem gives, He does exhibit the midah of rachmanis too, of pity. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But at its core, He said Hashem is good because He's good. not because he feels bad for us. He didn't have to create us needy and then give to us. That's not at its core what Hashem is doing. He's not giving to us because he feels bad for us. At its core, Hashem is a being of good. And therefore, Hashem's sense of giving is purely from a sense of giving. And that is the ultimate goal for us to strive to, where a person gives as an overflow of their own happiness. They're so excited to do well financially. They're so excited to be self-sufficient with their family, and everything is a blessing, that it just overflows from them. They want to share with others. How can they be alone in their joy? They want to share the joy with other people, not because they feel lacking or they feel pain, they feel guilt, or they feel uncomfortable. That being said, a person still has to use these midos of guilt, these midos of pity, compassion, in a selfish way, as the title teases. So let's read together what he's talking about, what it means to use compassion in a selfish way, and how can we strive for something even higher than that. So we're on Perek Tes, bottom of page 44. For those in person, I apologize. The last couple lines of each page got cut off. So he says, Terem shiagia ha'adam lemadregas shlemos hanoshias. Until a person achieves the final level of completion, harehu chaser, he's lacking in various different ways. Ein lo ashifa hanediva, he doesn't yet have this noble sense of drive, haba mitoch harchavas hadas, like we mentioned before, about this overspill of gratitude that he just wants to share with everybody. V'alkein b'derach aliyaso, on the way up, as the person strives to be more like God every day and be more giving and more kind in of itself, tzarech hu lehishtamesh l'tzorech hatov, he needs to use in the service of God along the way, gam b'she'ifa ravanit. He has to also use this sense of hunger, the sense of lacking. She'ifa shel miloi chesrona, the sense of feeling incomplete and uncomfortable. Hanovas mikoach hamosheich v'havas atzma. A self-focus, a sense of wanting yourself not to feel uncomfortable. That is, by definition, how all of us have to start our journey toward becoming the meitiv, the no-sane, that we're all striving to be. He gives an example. He says, in all avodas Hashem, there's always this idea of using middle steps, of using ulterior motives to help us get somewhere higher. L'mashal, in the last paragraph on the page, Bein Adam L'makom, when it comes to religious service between man and Hashem, Ya'aseh Shelo L'shma, a person does mitzvos at first for not pure reasons, for ulterior motives, kolomar, L'tzorach Atzmo, because of a person's own desires. When they're a little kid, for candy. When they get a little older, for bicycles, for prizes. As they get older, for parnasa, if they want to be a rabbi and they want to make some money that way. As they get even older, for kavod and a sense of respect. There's always some internal drive that can coincide with avodas Hashem, a life of spiritual growth. And he quotes from Chazal in the parentheses, mitoch shel lishma, yavali de lishma. Their hope is that by living a life at first that relies on these external motivators, eventually he'll come to a place where he does it purely because it's the right thing and not because of the bicycles or the sense of honor. Yasa meyira. Sometimes a person does things because out of fear of God. Hainu shiarei lenafsho. He's afraid of his own life. Meonish. That's a self-serving purpose. I'm scared I'm going to be punished. I'm scared God is going to be angry. That is self-serving. I'm going to be punished. Yasa menas tekabel pras. Or a person not because he's scared, but because he wants to earn reward in olam haba. Hainu shemavakesh schar leatzmo. Again, that's also self-serving. And yet that doesn't bother us so much, because we understand, mitoch shelo lishma, yavol lishma. A person has to eventually, would like eventually, to get to a place where that's not the sole motivator, but it's a necessary beginning step. And now he's going to say the same thing is true when it comes to interpersonal discipline. V'chein bein adam l'chaveiro yasa ke'elep. The same thing is true when it comes, so we're on the bottom of the page, it's cut off. The same thing is true when it comes to people with their friends. V'gam mitoch rachamim. I already explained to you that compassion is not purely for the other person. A lot of it has to do with easing a person's own conscience. You know what that's called? Lolishma. That's called for ulterior motives, which we hope will eventually lead to something higher. He's trying to assuage his own guilt. He sees someone else who's uncomfortable. On page 45 now. Even compassion is, in some sense, rooted in a taking sense of focusing on one's own needs. He's focused on himself. But it is praiseworthy. It is actually expected that a person will, on the path up, on the journey toward becoming selfless, a person has to use these internal barometers of what's fair and what's right and what's good, even though they seem like they're self-serving. But that's what Hashem put within us to help us along the right path. Chazal darshan the word levavcha, serve Hashem, love Hashem with all of your hearts. Hearts in plural, what does that mean? B'shnei yitzrecha, Chazal say. With both of your forces, forces for good, and even the Yetzer Hara, even things that seem selfish, even things that may not seem like the ultimate good in of themselves, that can also be used in service of Hashem. Even a selfish type of giving, even a selfish type of compassion can actually help. Now, there's probably a limit to this, right? They tell a story about a guy who's sick of looking for a shidduch. He tries to look for a perfect girl, and no one out there is good for him. So he calls the shadchan, and he says, you know what? Find me a horrible person. Like, find me like a really mean person. He heard one time in a shir, the back of his mind, about Chazal say that if you marry a witch, you marry a bad person, you're guaranteed to go to Olam Haba. Now, that's a perversion of what Chazal actually say, but somehow it's stuck in this guy's head. If he marries a witch, he marries a horrible person and tolerates her for his entire life, it'll be his ticket to Olam Haba. He decides, why should I work hard my entire life to get Olam Haba? Let me marry a witch, let me marry a horrible human being. So he calls the shadchan and he says, I'm sick of looking for a good person, find me a bad person, like a really obnoxious, horrible human being. Shadchan says, okay, I'll look into it and get back to you. She calls back a few weeks later. She says, I found you the perfect evil person. She's terrible. All her friends say she doesn't have any friends, but people who used to be her friends say she's selfish and she's self-centered and she's really evil, as most people described her. He says, perfect, I'll take her. So they go out a couple of dates, fine. He marries her. You know what happens? He marries her and he finds out she's wonderful. She's absolutely wonderful. She's considerate, she's kind, she's compassionate, she's a great listener, she takes care of all of his needs, she's so sweet, she's so conscientious about all of his needs. And he's furious. He calls up the shadchan and he says, hey, I asked you for a witch, and you found me this wonderful, compassionate, kind human being. Shadchan says, well, her reputation, you know what, let me look into it. Shadchan calls up the woman, and the shadchan calls the woman, and the shadchan says, hey, you know, your reputation was always so terrible, you were a horrible human being. You know what happened? And she says, ha, you think I'm going to let my husband go to Olam Haba on my account? Right, so in some sense, maybe the idea of self-centered compassion can go too far, right? Maybe some sense of giving in an evil type of way, maybe a perversion of what it means to use these midos along the proper path. But hopefully with some idea, there is going to be a way for us to talk about how we can use these midos, even a self-serving mida, along the journey. You need something?
No, yes? We're fine.
Okay. Sorry. Okay, so here we go. So now we have something incredible and a beautiful analogy to help us all understand what it means to actually use these ideas of sympathy and empathy to be able to help other people. He says on the second underline on page 45, Yesh bezeh davar nifla, it's an amazing thing, Eitza tova ma'od, a wonderful suggestion, L'kinyan koach hanasina la'asher yis'amek ba. Here's how a person can truly become more giving and use compassion first in the self-centered way and eventually turn it into the pure goodness that Hashem exhibits. He says, Hein koach ha'amanus, when it comes to artistry, l'havchin devarim dakim b'koach ha'medama. An artist, which we're going to define in a second, of many different types of fields, but an artist has the amazing ability to discern very nuanced and very sophisticated details of emotion with their imagination. On the second line of that paragraph, Ha'aman yirav yargish pratei pratim asher lo yavchinam acher. The artist is able to see and to feel and to really hone in on very specific details that a regular person doesn't really catch. The alkenya vateosam, and the artist is able to express them. In bedvarim o biksav, in bepesel o betmuna. An artist could be someone who is a very powerful orator, and with their words they can create a beautiful image. Oksav, they're a beautiful author, a poet. They're able to use their words to stir the heart because they can describe something, they can capture certain very detailed emotions. In bepesel, betmuna, sculptures or paintings, different types of art. Tzarech liyos aman gadol levatei, a person has to be very expertly trained as an artist to be able to tap into this. So, for example, he gives, Lamashal, where it's underlined, it's Rikshe Ha'aim Bedagasa Lebaneha. Let's say the artist wants to capture the image of a mother who's filled with worry over her child. Mother holding her baby and worrying about the future. An artist, whether they're using it in a poem, or in a story, or in a sculpture, or in a painting, Echi Margeshes V'Choshashes, how she feels, how she is worried, Bedako Supratios Nifla, with incredible detail. An artist's job is to be able to tap into that feeling, that emotion, and express it by painting a line here. Every line is carefully calculated. Every sculpt, every word, every rhyme, everything is carefully calculated to be able to express something that this mother feels, and the artist is able to imagine it, and not just imagine it for themselves, put it into beautiful imagery or words so other people can tap into it too. But you know what's amazing? He says, "Hi bi'atzma, a mother herself who's actually holding a baby, lo tetzarech la'amanut. The mother doesn't require anyone to describe it to her. The mother doesn't require a poem. She doesn't require a painting. She doesn't require a picture. Ki hi b'tiva osa. She is the mother. She feels. She does. She need not put it into words. She need not describe it to someone else. Aval kasher yisbatu hargashos takos ke'elu. But when someone else is trying to express it with very nuanced language, very nuanced imagery, Hinamo simro shem benefesh kol adam. Now everyone else can feel what she feels naturally. The mother is the one feeling these feelings. It's the work of art that allows the painter, that allows the audience of the paint, of the painting, to be able to feel the things that the mother feels naturally. A person who's been through the experience as a mother can feel the things that others require words and an entire exercise or a fancy painting to be able to do. How does this relate to our topic? Hashem gave each of us this power of an artist, to be able to imagine how others are feeling. In Rav and Ma'at, some of us are better at art, better at imagining, better at feeling other people's feelings. Others, not as much. But everyone has some strength, some capacity to be able to understand how other people are feeling. The more a person really thinks about it more and paints a picture in their own head, you can actually come to feel like that mother. You may not be a mother. You may not be someone who has ever had children before. But if you really take the time to get into the art, you can start to tap into the feelings that are natural for the woman herself. And you, the observer, can actually feel something. He says, when a person is trying on the way up to open themselves up, to become more naturally empathetic, more naturally able to feel the feelings of other people, same thing when it comes to the idea of generosity, of giving, of compassion, of caring for others. Until a person gets to the high, exalted level we talked about, of being just like Hashem, who gives, just because you give, you're an entire being overflowing of goodness. Before you get there, that's our question. How do we get there? How do we use compassion? How do we use these self-serving modalities as mediums to get there? Yitzayir benafsho, on the third line where it's underlined, Yitzayir benafsho estzaras nefesh chaveiro, try to picture, draw an image in your head of the pain of someone else, bedago sav, and their worries, l'chol prateyam v'chalkeyam, and as many details as you can. Don't just say that person is sad. Break it down. Make a story. Make it make sense to you. Use your past memories, your past experiences. Find a way to draw an image, to use your koach of amanut, of artistry, to be able to tap into what someone else might be feeling. That will lead a person to feel with the person who is suffering, which will lead to a person feeling compassion. Here's a very important line. We think of empathy, we think of caring for others typically about when someone's in pain, someone is lacking, when someone is struggling. But the reality is, Kain b'tzayro l'nefesh, l'nafsho es godel simchas re'ehu, v'ashro ba'asigo es asher yidrash lo. Or a person's joy. What does it mean to truly share in someone else's joy? To truly feel their happiness like your own? Be an artist. Think. Paint the picture. You're not feeling it naturally because there's someone else. You're motivated by self-interest. The best you can do is, okay, assuage your own guilt. But he's saying the way to work on it, the way to actually become, to take that self-interest about caring for others because it makes you feel uncomfortable, is really get into it. Be an artist. Start to take it and make it real. Imagine it. What are they going through? What are the feelings? How does their heart rate feel? How do you think their whole posture would be lined up if they're feeling sad, if they're feeling anxious? What does it mean for a person to feel these things? I felt these things before. Let me imagine, truly step into someone else's shoes and to feel it. Az biyado ki biyadohu l'savev osher rav kazel re'eyu b'nesivasa. A person can truly give good to their friends. And he says that is, if you skip down to the last paragraph on the page, avo mikevan shekvar zacha b'koach hanasina. This is all the first step. But eventually, when a person is getting better and better at this midah, shuv enu tzarech ma'asa uman. Eventually, you shouldn't need the artwork. You shouldn't need to have to picture it. Ela tivo achadash ya'aseh es shalo. It'll work by itself. It'll become your new nature. V'yanose b'nesina nekiyah. You'll give from a true, clean, pure sense of giving. Minadivas libo hatov, from a true sense of goodness. V'lo mitoch she'ifas mili chesrono v'chashash al yatzmam. Think about what he's saying over here. If there's two models of feeling. You can be an artist. You can be someone who imagines and conveys to others what it might feel like to be a mother caring for her children. Or you can be a mother who doesn't have to think about it because it's your essence. That's what she is. She is concerned. She is worried. She feels these things. It's not an avodah. She doesn't have to work on it and think about it and really dwell on it. That's who she is. What if all of us start out, when it comes to everyone else's feelings, like an artist? This is an important tool in our palette. We have the ability to start thinking actively. It takes work in the beginning to think, what is that person suffering with? What would that be like? What would that be like? Oh my goodness, that person's really, whoa. They're probably so overwhelmed right now, and they must be thinking about this. And on top of that, this child did this, and the neighborhood this, and the time of year, getting overwhelmed thinking about it. That's the first step. That's the idea of using empathy, using this idea of stepping into their shoes, painting the picture, being the artist to be able to imagine it. If you do that enough, eventually you become the person who actually feels these things on your own. Of course that person's suffering. I don't have to stop and sit and make a whole picture and spend 3 hours working into why they might be upset. With enough practice, it becomes you. It becomes the reality. You feel these things not because you imagine them, but because they're real. You truly are with them. You're one with them. Think about a person who cares for themselves. They're not worried about their own suffering as like an outsider and say, oh, my poor self. It's, no, I have needs. I have to just take care of what I need. For an outsider, we're talking about this idea of external compassion, of, oh, I feel so bad for them. But it is possible to take someone outside of us and feel the more natural type. Let's say one's own children, right? Person's own child may not be a sense of, oh, I feel so bad for my child. No, you give to your child because you give to your child, and that's the end of that. You don't have to break it down and imagine the suffering of the child. This is your child. They're an extension of you. You feel them because you feel them. There's no assuaging of your own guilt and feeling of inadequacy and how can I live with myself if they're not being taken care of. You don't go through the whole rigmarole. They're your kid. They're you. They're an extension of you. The compassion, the empathy is natural. You're not imagining anything. What if we have the ability to expand that circle beyond just us and our families? Our closest friends, our closest neighbors, or those in Klal Yisrael and the world beyond. What if we can get to a point where we don't just have to imagine it and step into their shoes? What if we can literally be that person who, I feel it naturally? I'm not assuaging my own guilt. I'm not giving because I'm fine, but they're not. And if they're not, then how can I live? And if I don't live, I'm going to feel so guilty. Let me give so I don't feel guilty anymore. That's so external. It's a good starting point, as you said, lo lishma. But if you work on this empathy strategy, you work on truly stepping into someone's shoes, painting the picture, eventually the goal would be to come to a place like Hashem where you're not lacking anything. You're giving because, of course I'm giving. What do you mean? I just feel it. Not because someone else. I just feel it. It's just the way I am. What he's describing over here is a very, very, very critical difference between what we call sympathy and empathy. Typically those words are interchangeable in regular language. In English, people typically insert sympathy or empathy in the same sentence because it means to care for someone else. But actually, in psychological language, they're not the same thing at all. Sympathy and empathy are two very different levels. They're both, in his language, lo lishma. They're not the highest level of just being a giver from the sense of being a giver like God. But they are different levels. What he called rachmanas, that's sympathy, and no se ba'olam chavero, carrying the burden with someone else, is really called empathy. There's a clinical social worker named Dr. Brené Brown, who's an author and researcher in this area, and she says that she doesn't like when people misuse the word sympathy and empathy. She says sympathy is a feeling bad for someone. Empathy is feeling bad with someone. Where sympathy has the ability to push people away, to highlight the disparity between those who are fortunate and those who are suffering. Empathy kind of levels the playing field. Empathy allows people to actually feel together. And Dr. Brown's analogy was very beautiful about a person who falls in a dark hole. Okay, the hole is an analogy for a person feeling stuck, feeling in an overwhelmed place, feeling the suffering of loss and pain. A person's in a deep dark hole. So empathy would be a person who passes by the hole and climbs down the hole and says, I'll wait with you until the fire department comes. Sympathy is passing by, sticking your face in the hole and saying, wow, sure looks dark down there. You poor, poor thing. See ya. Right? Sympathy is the sense of, I'm up here, you're down there. Oh, it must be so hard for you down there. You poor, poor thing. You must really be suffering. That's terrible. Anyway, I got to go to work right now, so adios. Empathy is saying, you know, I know what this is like. I've had this before. I've felt these feelings before. You're not alone. Or, I haven't ever felt this before. I can't possibly imagine what you're going through. Tell me about it. Or you need a hug. Just, I want to hear about what you're going through, if you're willing to talk about it. The difference is, when a person receives sympathy, my sympathies, they're not getting a sense of comfort. Not that sympathy is evil, but sympathy is not at the same level as empathy, because sympathy is this disconnect. In Dr. Brown's words, very often sympathy starts with the words, at least. You know, my child is kicked out of school. Well, at least you have children. You're missing something. You know, my marriage really is rocky. Well, at least you got married. A person feels uncomfortable seeing someone else suffer, and they're either trying to bring them up. Come on, it's not so bad. At least you have this. Look on the bright side. Like a silver lining around that cloud. It's not so bad. Not really suffering. I feel bad for you, but look on the bright side. Empathy truly gets down with someone and says, you know, either I've experienced this, and I'll, in the Hebrew, no se bo olam chavero, I'll carry the burden with you. The two of us together will sit here, we'll talk about it. Or to say nothing, but just to sit there and cry with them. A person needs a shoulder to cry on. You didn't give them any words of comfort. You didn't tell them anything different's going to happen. You didn't promise them empty promises for the future. Because let's be honest, what can you really promise someone who suffered a loss? What are you supposed to say to them? Seriously, what are you supposed to say to them? I don't know. What are you supposed to say to them? But the idea is, if you help someone feel, you're with them. You understand them. You, as an artist, can imagine their suffering, can imagine their pain. They feel that someone gets them. Hashem also uses these midos. Hashem says, I am with you in the pain, like Hashem in the burning bush, when Bnei Yisrael are suffering in Mitzrayim. And Hashem uses Rachmanas too. He uses sympathy. But they're not the core of who Hashem is. At his core, Hashem is a Chanan. Hashem is a Meitiv. Yes, he uses these Rachmanas. These are also Hashem's traits. They teach us how to use those traits too. As we're saying, these are important traits, lo lishma, eventually to get to a higher place. But just don't mix up sympathy and empathy. Recognize there are different tools that we have along the way. Sympathy is the sense of disconnect, the sense of, wow, I wish I never had that coming to me, or don't worry, it's not so bad for you. Empathy says, I can get down with you and feel with you and help you share the burden. Yeah. It's a beautiful idea. Dessler's language certainly is tapping into this idea of empathy as an artist, to truly feel what someone else is feeling. That's exactly what he's telling us is one medium along the journey toward becoming a Meitiv. Imagine doing this for the next 10 years. Imagine doing this. Imagine truly becoming the Meitiv by imagining someone else's pain. Not standing as an outsider and saying, wow, that stinks for you, why you must be suffering so much, but to truly get down there with them and feel with them. Eventually, you no longer need the art. You become the person who feels that. When they're in pain, you're in pain, not because you are assuaging your own feeling of guilt, but they're an extension of you, and if they're suffering, how could you not take care of them? You're not lacking in any way. You're not empty in any way. But if they're suffering, how can you not be good and overflow and share your happiness with them? They're an extension of you. Beautiful. I get worked up every single time. It's such a powerful idea of how to become a true compassionate person, not just by action, but also in terms of mindset. Chapter 10 on page 46 is something we've already incorporated in our previous year. So we'll skip it for the time being. The last chapter for tonight is chapter 11. In the book, not bankruptcy. Chapter 11, Hakaras HaTov. He's going to talk about how the ideas of giving and taking, how they relate to Hakaras HaTov, and he's actually going to put forward a very sophisticated idea of what it means to be grateful, what it means to be ungrateful. I think, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I think if you ask most people, they would say that they're grateful people. I don't think people tend to think of themselves as ungrateful. I'm an ingrate, you know, I take things and never say thank you to anybody. I don't feel anything for anybody. I don't think people would say that they're ungrateful. Maybe I'm naive. But how he's going to define Hakaras HaTov right now, it's going to be so pointed and so powerful in teaching us what it means to truly be Makar Tov and how it comes, how it boils down, like everything else, to giving and taking. Chapter 11, Hakaras HaTov. Ma hinei Hakaras HaTov ha-hoda'a. What does it mean to be Makar Tov, to recognize good, and to show, express gratitude? Ayehu mekoram benefesh. What are the internal sources of these midos? Me'ayin tovo kefias ha-tova. And from where does ingratitude come? Asherov b'nei adam yikashluba. Most people stumble in a sense of being ungrateful. Where does that come from too? Unsurprisingly, gam bazet akir es hanosim v'anotel. Here too, you can discern the giver and the taker. Just two more lines before the next page. Hanosin yargish b'levavo asher lo yachbots b'matnos chinam. A A person who's truly a giver, a person who, as we described, is this all-giving sense of compassion and this all sense of wanting to do good for others, doesn't want any gifts from others, because they're complete, as we talked about. Kishi faso hi raklitein, his drive is only to give. V'lo limshoch elav es hadvarim shehim chutz mimenu, he doesn't desire to suck in outside external things. We're on the next page now. Alken kasher yagia elav. When a person like that does receive a favor or an item, a gift from a friend, there's this overwhelming desire to pay back, to give something in return. So if he can't pay cash, he is left with this bill, if you will, left with this uneven sense of dissonance, this disconnect, this sense of being indebted to someone else. V'zohi asher nikra lab shem hoda. That's what it means to be grateful. He is now defining gratitude as a sense of uneasiness or a sense of incomplete balance that a person feels when they are given as a favor from someone else because they themselves, the recipient, wasn't looking to receive anything else. We'll give the contrast, then we'll explain where the nuance is over here. Second paragraph. Aval hanotel, a person who's all about taking. Yishof tadir limshoch elav es kol asher yuchal. He's always looking to take in more and more for himself. He never thinks he has enough. Hein b'gzeilav, hein b'tarmis, hein b'matana, whether it's with theft or with trickery or with loopholes or with gifts. Uvekarev libo yachshov ki yakol shalohu. Because this person deserves, everything is coming to him. He never has enough. He truly deserves a lot more. Ubishvilo, and it's all fitting for him. Alkein be'agio davar tov. When he receives something good, a present, a promotion, a compliment, recognition. When he gets anything, asher etivi mo chaviro, someone else does something good for him, lo yargish b'chiyuv tashlumin klal. He doesn't feel this internal sense of things aren't right, I owe them something back. Hu asher nichaneo, we coined him kafui tova. B'im tireh es hanotel ki yodeh. What do you mean? Everyone says thank you. Everyone says thank you. B'lefamim gam ba'ofen yafemo. Sometimes the person writes a beautiful thank you note. They even give a thank you gift. They even can give back a beautiful piece of china as a thank you gift. Alta minbo uvahodaso. Don't believe that this person is truly experiencing what we're now defining as gratitude. Kibisfasav yachanof. With his lips, he is flattering. He is saying something he doesn't truly believe. The libo balimo, his heart is not with him. Ach basher bechefzo lesaveve love otovos rabos. Umatanos chashuvos. In this society, to be seen as a person who should get more gifts, people, if you don't say thank you, people aren't going to give you next time. It is self-serving for him to say thank you because his real intention is to be a person people aren't angry at, so they'll invite him to the next simcha, so they'll include him in the next poker game. Yislabesh b'ksus makir tato, if he puts on the mask, the costume of a person who is grateful, nimtsasha gam hoda'asa, turns out, even when he's expressing gratitude, netilahi, really he's taking, kikachi Kavanasa, that is the true intention of the person. And here's where I think there's a very nuanced perspective of what it means to be grateful and why all of us might say we're grateful. He's saying something different. What he's saying is that if you get a favor, either from God or from another person, and you feel like, good, like that makes sense, like I deserve that. Not even like in an entitled, arrogant way, but just like that works out well. I got my paycheck. I worked hard. I deserve a paycheck. Got my paycheck. You say thank you to the boss, but you don't really mean thank you. It's the polite thing to say. So you say thank you for your paycheck. But think about it. That person doesn't truly feel that it's a gift. I worked hard for that. It's coming to me. Because I did what I had to do. Everything I get is all fair game. So then there's no unbalance within me. He is defining gratitude as the feeling you feel within that something is off. I didn't need that. I didn't have to have it. Someone gave it to me. I feel like things have shifted. I have to give something back to level the playing field. If you feel whatever you're getting is magia lecha, that it's deserving to you, not even in an arrogant way, because you worked hard for it, or because I went to their simcha, so they came to my simcha. I gave them a gift for their baby. They gave a gift for my baby. In that sense of tit for tat, of things being balanced, there is no room for akaras hatov. You can say thank you. You can give a gift back. You can give a note. But you're not truly experiencing akaras hatov. Hakaras HaTov is that feeling of, wow, I was perfectly fine before this, and now something has upset the balance. I've now taken more than I need, taken more than I had, and I was perfectly fine before. I got to translate this feeling into something to even the playing field. if it's expressing thanks, if it's recognizing the person, giving something back, because currently I feel like I have more than I deserve. A person truly feels that what the favors others give, and it makes sense, it's part of society's expectations, there's not really room for true hakaras hatov. I want you to think about that. That's pretty sophisticated. What most of us would call hakaras hatov, being grateful, is not in his language the giver's gratitude. A giver's gratitude comes from the place of, before you gave it to me, I was perfectly fine. And if you hadn't given it to me, I wouldn't have griped about it. But there's something about now getting it that makes me feel overjoyed, overblessed, overcompensated. Even if I'm working hard for the money. But I have a sense what I do, the work that I do, is fair game. And I enjoy what I do. I put out what I put out. And I feel everything is fine. And when I get it, I get this sense of gratitude. You may not feel gratitude for your paycheck because you work hard for it. But how about everything else? Your eyesight. Big bonus, right? Because that's something you're not expecting, right? But what if you feel to yourself, like, I earned that big bonus. I worked hard for that. I really outperformed. I stayed late every single day. Then that you might say, thank you for the bonus, but are you truly feeling gratitude, or are you saying the words that come with being a sociable person but are not truly coming from that sense? When we pick up next week, we're going to tie this into what it means to have service of Hashem, because we surely should all feel hakaras hatov to Hashem. Our very first words in the morning, modeh ani lefanecha. We have hoda'ah, we admit. You know, the Hebrew word hoda'ah has two meanings. Hebrew word modim has two meanings. One is to admit, and one is to give thanks. Interestingly, in English also, the same word acknowledge, that same one word, has the same exact two meanings. Acknowledge means either to acknowledge something else, someone else's right, to acknowledge someone's role, or to acknowledge, to give acknowledgement, to give thanks. The word admit and the word thanks are linked in Hebrew and in English. There's something about this idea that to truly give hakaras hatov, you have to admit that it's from someone else, and it wasn't really deserving to you. Imagine what it means to feel true hakaras hatov to Hashem. It means, maybe I shouldn't have woken up today. I didn't have to wake up today. If we have this mindset, Hashem owes me eyesight, and He owes me life, and He owes me breath. He created me. How could He not feed me? Of course I woke up with a beating heart today. Of course I have a family. Of course I have a job. How can God create me and not give me these things? You might say thank you to Hashem. You might bow and modim, but you're not truly feeling hakaras hatov. Hakaras hatov is not an action. It could be expressed through action. Hakaras hatov is not a word. It could be expressed through words. But hakaras hatov is a feeling. It's a feeling of, I have more than I need, and you gave it to me, and whoa! Even though it was day after day, who knew? I'm so excited. I'm so appreciative. I'm filled with this imbalance now. How can I go about my day just as an average person? I have to give something back. I have to praise you, Hashem. I have to do mitzvos. Because something has upset the order. I was fine before. You don't owe me anything, Hashem. Both with Hashem and with each other. True hakaras hatov is a sense of feeling like a giver, being a person who doesn't need anything else. And whatever you get, even if it seems standard and things you've expected for the last 30, 40, 50 years, to be a makir tov is a person who truly, truly feels it's a blessing. It's a gift. It's above and beyond. I'm so grateful because I feel that dissonance. I didn't have it before. Now I have it. So our takeaways for tonight, number one, is sympathy and empathy may not be the highest forms of giving because they're assuaging a person's personal urges. But at the same time, as Rav Dessler explained, they are valuable and necessary stepping stones to allow a person to eventually reach toward becoming inherently good. Between them, sympathy and empathy is a higher level where you're not just looking down on someone and trying to make them feel better, but truly being with them, feeling together with them. In Rav Dessler's language, that's the idea of being an artist at first, being able to picture and imagine what someone else is going through with the ultimate goal to be the person, actually have them be an extension of you where you truly feel that you are the one overflowing your goodness to others. And true hakaras hatov is a sense of internal dissonance because I felt so content before that now whatever I get from Hashem, from man, I feel an overwhelming sense to give back because that's what it means to be a meitiv, to be a giver.